Thank you very much. Ray Fassett, Glenn, can you do a roll call?
I'll leave Gisela to do that. Thanks, Ray, because she's on the meeting view.
Very good. Thank you.
Good morning, good afternoon to everyone. On today's call, we have Ray Fassett, and from staff, we have Rob Hogarth, Glenda Saint-Géry, and myself, Gisela Gruber-White. We have apologies from Julie Headland, and Ron Andruff will be joining us shortly. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. So where to begin? All right, so we have us. Others may be joining soon into this call. Actually, I don't mind, because I have a couple questions with regards to the rules of procedure. That Rob is on the call, thankfully, and can help us with. So, first of all, I would like to go ahead and say that we will move back to biweekly meetings. And if somebody has an objection to that, they could do that on list. So that would help Gisela and Glenn and update our wiki page, et cetera. Secondly, we'll try to keep our call to an hour today. And third, I would like to try to move right into an open issue that surfaced that appears to me, and Rob can jump in and help me out here, as it pertains to Section 4.2, voting thresholds, and particularly as this relates to abstentions. Rob, is there any background on exactly what happened here from the time it left the GCOT's hands into the OSC hands and now in public comment? What happened?
Yes, I'll attempt to recount that history. Basically, what happened is that council members engaged in discussions on the open list and had a number of questions about the counting of abstentions of council members who abstained on votes, and agreed at their meeting that because there were differing views, that the best approach would be to provide some alternatives in the proposed operating procedures for public review and comment. So the thought being that in providing the two alternatives in a public comment forum, the new council would then have the benefit of different points of view, and different viewpoints expressed during the 21-day comment period. Now, if you'd like, I can go through the two different options, at least as I understand them, in terms of your original language and the substitute language. I think the fundamental issue comes down to what is the denominator of the votes. And I think this work team has discussed that in the past. In our standard example, if you have 10 votes and you need 60, more than 60%, what happens if you create a scenario where an abstention is now a non-vote and you're now calculating not 60% of 10, but 60% of 8? And I think what became clear in the dialogue over the last couple of days just before the GNS council meeting was that folks really were not – well, number one, I think the councilors recognized that their decision at the 24 September council meeting was solely to place the recommendations of the work team as reviewed by the OSC on a public comment forum, not to rule on them positively or negatively. That was one fundamental agreement that they had. The second was there was clearly lack of time and understanding for various council members to really sit down and parse through what they wanted to accomplish and what they wanted to say with respect to abstentions. In some respects, there just wasn't a clear understanding of what it meant not to have, the denominator being all the council members versus a subset of the council members who participated in a particular meeting. And that's sort of where things stand right now. One thing that we committed to do as staff in providing a contribution to the comment forum, and we've just embarked on that this week, is to provide an analysis for the community of what the different breakdowns might look like depending upon how you did calculate the votes. And I don't have that on the tip of my tongue right now, but Philip Shepard had suggested three different categories. One, the denominator being all council members. Two, the denominator being just the quorum of members who were present. And then three, some hybrid of those two, which counted the abstentions as no votes versus just an expression of concern.
Okay, yeah, that's a good background, and it is also refreshing me a little bit, because I've seen stuff in different places, sometimes an email, going back and forth. So, yeah, that helps me. Now, fundamentally, and you said a point earlier, which I agree with, the work team, our work team, landed very strong on the concept that, while we didn't use this language, but it means the same thing, the denominator must remain fixed. We landed pretty strong on that point. Now, I'm looking at the original GCOT language, and then I'm trying to interpret the proposed language, which I've read each probably more times than I'm embarrassed to say. And I'm trying to understand, in either one of those, doesn't the denominator remain fixed in both of those paragraphs? Now, one comes out and says it, don't get me wrong, but doesn't the practical effect of both...
Sorry to interrupt. Eric Brunner-Williams and Avery Doria have joined the call.
Good.
I think that's a reasonable interpretation of that, Ray. The second sort of substitute language was an attempt to make the original language more specific and clear. And with Avery joining the call, she may be able to provide a perspective on that as well.
Okay, so that's a good starting point. And the reason I wanted to mention that is because that was what I thought. And I was somewhat involved in some of the flurry, mostly out of courtesy, when OSC was sharpening some things and staff was making some contributions at our request. You know, so I did see this, and I landed at the same place at the time. While I may not have commented or I didn't want to speak on behalf of the GCOT unless I absolutely had to, we were reaching a deadline. But as I read it, I understood that this fundamental point, that the denominator remains fixed, and all we're doing is sharpening it, making it perfectly clear, which I thought was an improvement, substantively speaking, does not change the GCOT position. So
yes, but understand, too, that, you know, in the comment forum, now that it's been made a little bit more clear, someone could comment and say, well, I don't like that.
Oh,
you know,
sure. Well,
they
could do that anyway.
Discussion.
Yeah, they could do that anyway, because even in our original language, we were coming out and saying that, you know, an abstention counts the same as a vote against. That would, to me, if you had an issue on that, that would bring it out anyway. I suppose maybe we're drawing, more attention has been drawn to this now because we're saying, okay, we need to know from you which one you like, but and therefore that could bring attention to it, and then people bring in the opinion that an abstention should not count as the part of the denominator. As they say. So, now with that said, Eric Brewer, Eric is on the call now, and I've already seen an email coming from him where he's sort of thinking or rationalizing that, you know, the abstention should not be part of the denominator. Eric, you want to go ahead and comment on that?
My issue was that they should not be included in the numerator. That is, with negative votes.
Okay, that's different.
It's distinct from whether or not they're counted as votes at all, that is present in the denominator, or whether or not any rule is made about non-votes by members present.
Right, so it's really the denominator that we're focusing on, and why? Why the denominator? Because the bylaw, you know, obviously there are scripted percentages on depending on what the issue is or what the motion is, or you know, in the bylaws, things are scripted, and it's all scripted on percentages.
This is Avery.
Hello, Avery.
Hi. But the ones in the bylaws that are scripted by percentages are at the moment, they're written as against a denominator of full population.
Exactly. But the point is, if I could sit here today and say I can make the assumption when someone uses percentages, they're assuming the denominator is not going to change. Otherwise, they wouldn't use percentages. They'd use hard-coded numbers, right? You need 8 out of 13. They would come out and say it that way. But if you assume that the 13 denominator isn't going to change, then you can go ahead and use percentages. So our point was that if you don't keep the denominator fixed, people and abstentions can be used to manipulate the percentages.
Mr. Chairman, Ron Andruff just weighing in. Just got on the call. Sorry to be late, gentlemen, ladies.
Very good. Haven't heard that.
Ray, if I can just a process clarification point, just for my benefit and maybe for others.
Yeah, and for me.
Well, at this point, and please, Avery, correct me if I'm wrong. At this point, the work team's work on this piece is done. It's now out for public comment. Community members, including members of this work team, are free to comment on the entire package or individual pieces of that. When that comment period ends, the staff will provide a summary of the comments that have come in. And then, presumably in Seoul, council members, particularly the new members of the council, will have an opportunity to discuss those. And then they'll be voting on what the new procedures package will look like.
Yeah, and I might be jumping ahead of the game. I do have an aim here of what I'd like to do as a work team, and discuss as a work team is, reaffirm our position as part of the public comment process. I think that could be healthy. But it has to be, what we believe, or what we feel together as a group, not if we can. Otherwise, we can all, as individuals, of course, do a comment. But I think it's, we have a sort of a vested interest in this. It's our work. And if we could put in a public comment that explains our position or why we favor one versus the other and reaffirming that the denominator should be fixed, that is the spirit, that was the intent, that could be beneficial to others to understand. Yeah, please, Avery, go ahead.
I'll be
quiet now.
I want to add one thing to what Rob said, which is, and indeed the process is as you described it, I think the one other piece is that on the weekend prior to the meeting, when the council is reviewing the comments, council and, associated, everyone in the room is reviewing, there will be a time for people to propose amendments, and that those amendments would be voted on in the Wednesday meeting before the package. So if the comments bring up something that needs to be amended, that's when an amendment will probably be crafted. The other thing is, I think, yes, you're right, if this group has either a explanation they want to give that the group can agree on, or has, changes its mind about something and wants to offer an amendment or further, I think it definitely should do it as a group if it can.
Yeah, that's where, as the chair, I would like to try to lead us down this path. If possible, I'd like to investigate it. I think today is a good time to do that. If you don't mind, Gisela, could you provide for Avery and Eric and the recording who is on the call right now?
Yes, on the call we have Ray Fassett, Eric Brunner-Williams, Avery Doria, Ron Andruff, and from staff we have Rob Hogarth, Glenda Saint-Giry, and myself. Thank you.
Welcome, Ron.
Thank you. Nice to be there.
Okay, so we have three of us. Well, actually, yeah, three of us, with Avery, of course. We should just adopt Avery, I think. She really helped us get through, I think, to the finish line. But as a work team, just those on the call, and I'm going to say myself, Ron, Eric, and Avery. Well, if you could each give me your opinion on one real specific issue, do we believe as a group that the denominator should remain fixed when it comes to abstentions? We'll start with Eric. My position is yes.
Can you define that term, please, so we're all speaking to the same issue, just your definition?
Yeah.
As well as explain yes appeals to you more than no, or I don't know.
Okay, let me try and answer Ron's question. So there's going to be 7 council members from the contracted party house and 13 from the non-contracted party house. That's 20 total. So whenever a vote is taken, the percentages of the vote will be based on a total of potential possible of 20. It can't change. Can't be 19, can't be 18. It always has to be 20. So if somebody doesn't vote, it's still, however many people did vote, either way, is a percentage of the 20.
Can I comment?
Yeah, please, Ivory, go ahead.
I agree with you in principle, but I think we're always talking about denominators being either 7 or 13. I don't think 20 is actually everything.
That's exactly correct. I always fall into that trap. This is Ray speaking, so everybody knows who's falling into this trap again. That's exactly right. It's of 7 or of 13. It's never of 20. Thank you, Ivory.
And we never consider the possibility, then, that one of the 7 or one of the 13 is en route, stuck dead, under a bus. But it's not a question of abstention, but rather of absence, without a delegate, without a proxy.
All right, that proxies are going to complicate the discussion.
Right, but the assumption that all 7 are present is an assumption. What about the case where one is absent? So we have 6 out of the 7.
Okay.
This is Aubrey. That's exactly the question. You know, is it always out of the full count of the House, or is it out of the quorum, leaving aside then what happens to abstention? So that is indeed the first part of the question.
And actually, what if there is a quorum in only one of the houses, and there's not a quorum in the other?
No, I think quorum is quorum. I don't think that it's about, you know, that doesn't break down on House lines, I don't think, Eric, as far as I understood it.
So we have a meeting in which 13 of the non-contracted party people show up and none of the contracted party people show up, and there's a vote. Is it a real vote?
There's no quorum, I think, in that case.
Yeah. I think quorum is defined as quorum in both houses.
That's right.
I have to look at the text, but I think that's
right. I was just told that the converse of that. Or
well,
I
he misunderstood your question. The answer is a quorum of each house.
Okay. So back to the 6 out of 7. We have a quorum, but the question is it 6 or is it 7?
That's the question.
And that's without the abstention of one of the 6. That's the absence of one of the 7.
Well, this is Rob, if I can just interject in the hope of providing some guidance here. You're going to be looking at these votes in a collective way, also considering, and Glenn can help potentially on this, considering the absentee voting provisions, right? So depending upon the topic, I guess your position, Ray, is that any topic is fair game for this. But depending on the topic, if someone is not present, then there are absentee voting processes that will be in place to ensure that if that person is not there on that particular call or was dropped off or disconnected, that through the process of an email vote subsequent to the meeting, they would still have their opportunity to cast their vote.
That is exactly, I couldn't have said it better. That's what I think.
Well, I would agree with that as well. I think that solves the problem of the guy being stuck on his bus and couldn't get off, you know, to get to the call. He can place his vote as an absentee vote. But the question, did we have quorum to even bring that vote about? And I guess that's probably in the other procedures about quorum and about the absentee balloting, I'm guessing.
Yeah, I only hesitate because our hypothetical guy or gal could be from Honduras and in the Punky right now and not likely to get out of off the bus for some time.
Right.
You know, what occurred to the .IQ managers could happen to a person who's a council member. So we would be then stuck between a scheduled time when a vote has to complete and the process for creating the alternative for that person who was no longer able to, who was temporarily, we hope, unable to vote.
Yeah, and I don't want to mix apples and oranges here, and Rob, correct me if I'm going off on a tangent, but I don't want to mix up absentee quorum with absentee vote, if you will. With the assumption, even getting to this point of talking about absentee votes, is the fact that there is a quorum.
Well, and if I can interject again, and I hope this is helpful, Rob, again. Again, the percentages are based on the denominator. It doesn't say that anyone has to vote, right? So, and that's where you'll get into the abstention question. But in the case of our mythical person from Honduras, if they're in jail or can't vote, Glenn is still going to do the calculation and say, gee, was it 60% or not?
Right.
Of the 20, whether that person ultimately had the chance to vote within the time frame or not.
Right. I think the issue here, too, that we have to look at is we have scripted scripted scenarios that absentee voting can be used. Do we need to expand that?
This is Ron speaking. I think what Rob just said, you know, takes that issue off the table for me in the sense that, you know, there are provisions in place to still check for quorum, and there are provisions in place for voting. So then it comes down to the question about the denominator and how that's going to work. And so the question is, and then the question you posed again, Chair, was, do we agree with the denominator or disagree? Is that correct?
That is the fundamental question. Others can pipe in that I'm off base, but yeah, should the denominator remain fixed on all votes, or should we allow abstentions to not be counted as part of the denominator? To me, that's exactly the fundamental question.
Well, I caught a couple of quick emails that you and Eric exchanged, and I think that the issue about abstention, I felt when it first came up that if abstentions were cast as a no vote wasn't correct. I didn't feel comfortable with that, but we were told that the board uses that process now. So in order to kind of maintain the process, I had pushed and said, let's go with what the board's doing. But now that this is, you know, come around again and it's being really looked at very hard, I'm inclined to say if I abstain from a vote, that was neither yes nor no. And as a result of that, whatever the other votes count up to be will be the determinant factor. But abstention should not be cast as a no vote because it's not fair. Basically, abstention and no is you know, counted together, and yes is counted singularly. It's not correct.
Yeah, and I think that's why this new wording came in, is because it's really not, correct me, Ralph, if I'm wrong, it's really not the case that abstention counts as a no vote at the board level, but it does count as part of the denominator. So in order to really be in line and with how the board does things, the language was sharpened to clarify, no, it's not a no vote, but it is the denominator. It will remain fixed, just like at the board level. Have I said that correctly, Rob?
I think so. I mean, the bottom line is, as you guys have set it up in your recommendations, it takes positive votes to pass things.
Yeah.
And so an abstention is a non-positive vote, just as a no vote is a non-positive vote. You either reach, if you keep the denominator the same, you either reach 60% or you don't, based upon yeses.
Yeah, and that's the key question, and I'm talking too much. And is there, anybody else have any comments?
Well, I'm convinced that it should not be, the denominator should not be fixed. That is, abstention removes the vote from determining the percentage, otherwise an abstention is a vote, whether you call it affirmative for a yes or affirmative for a no, it's still an affirmative act rather than a non-act.
Mm-hmm.
And as a...
I'm following you on this, Eric.
I can imagine that a person might be disinclined to declare their conflict and hence to abstain, knowing that doing so would actually determine the outcome rather than have no effect on the outcome.
So, okay, so if I'm hearing this correctly, if there are seven in the contracted party house and one that abstains, then you would like the denominator to be six.
Correct.
Avery, your position was, do you agree with that?
It's diametrically opposed. I actually think that, especially with something as small as 7, but even something as small as 13, that what really counts is getting the right number of affirmative voices for something.
Yeah.
Now, yes, the quorum rule does help a little in terms of keeping us away from the complete absurdum of, you know, there just being one person left that gets to decide something. But not really, because if we have a quorum and six people abstain, then one person gets to decide. And so that result strikes me as problematic.
Yeah, that's 100%.
With a moving denominator. Right. We've taken care of it in half by saying you always have to have a quorum before you start to vote. So, you know, it'll never end up adjusted by more than one person based on quorum rules, I don't think. I haven't done all the tables in math, but I think that quorum rules mean that there's a leeway of just one. But first of all, I think if there is a conflict of interest, everyone on the council would declare that conflict of interest honestly, whether they thought it was going to affect the vote or not. I mean, it's just an assumption I'm going to make about council members, that they would always declare their, you know, their conflict of interest honestly, if only because it'll fail the sniff test if they don't, or giggle test, however you want to name it. But if, let's say, there is conflict of interest in a financial sense or other sense for a majority of the members, then a very small number of people end up making the decisions. And that's why I tend to favor, in general, a positive requirement.
Right.
Well, but every I agree with the with your thinking in general, but I just find a scenario that six would be abstaining in any circumstance that I just don't see that happening. But the concern that I'm feeling is that because I abstain, all of a sudden that goes to a negative, where had I not abstained, it would have been perhaps positive. I voted in the affirmative. But I think our SOI, DOI, Statement of Interest and Declarations of Interest work that we did earlier on forces all council members to put it out there before the discussion begins about that topic. So I think if the chair found that there were six people abstaining on that particular topic, maybe the chair would then take some action and say, we really need to rediscuss this, rework this, or figure out another way around it. Would not the chair have the ability to do such a thing?
Possibly, but let me just bring it back here. It is my idea. I want to have this discussion and everything, but just a quick procedural thing is we've already stated our position as a work team. You know, it's already out there. I don't see it likely that we would submit a public comment that now states something differently. What I was looking to accomplish is, can we reaffirm our position?
And reaffirming the position would be that we would hold the denominator at a fixed.
That was what we've already decided.
That's what we stated. Okay. As a work team chair, I mean, our job is just to deliver a work product, and then the community has to weigh in on whether that product is acceptable or not acceptable or needs to be revised.
Yeah.
So I don't know if our work team needs to, you know, make a statement to the affirmative. We believe this is correct. That's why we said it. I think that's a given. But I think the bigger issue really is maybe, you know, is it for us to continue to debate this argument or to allow the community to come back with their position on it?
Well, I hear you, but...
But then again,
it,
I don't know how clear that position is stated, you know? Is it answer A or answer B? I don't know if the community sees it that way.
Well,
they may see it more abstract.
Some in the community might want to know, what does the GCOT think? You know, some in the community might help them.
Yeah.
You know, if we provided, why do we agree with the modified language as proposed? Why do we agree with changing our own language? That's really what it is. I think the proposed language is sharper and better than what ours originally was.
Mm-hmm.
And it could be helpful for us to provide an explanation of why we think go with the new language, not what we drafted, but go with this new language, and here's why.
But here's the bugaboo, is that on this call there's Eric and I standing on the side saying we should reduce the denominator, and there's you two standing on the other side saying we should keep it. So we're kind of in a deadlock. That's the problem.
Well, I think we can, and, you know, debating is healthy. Now, let me just state why I think it would be very dangerous to be moving around that denominator, because it's going to manipulate the percentages. If you base something on percentages, you can't move the denominator. And the bylaws are scripted in percentages. So you have to go back. If we say you can change the denominator, then that means to people that are doing, that did the bylaws, have to go back and start hard coding the different thresholds. 5 out of 7, 2 out of 7 for a motion. What 25%? What they can't say 25%. They're going to have to say, okay, it's going to be 3 out of 7. If we do that, it's just going to cause an effect the other direction.
This is Aubrey. Can I comment?
Yeah.
I have two comments. One on the one of whether this group should comment or not. I think if it has a unanimous position, it should comment. I think otherwise individuals should comment. I think in terms of the bylaws, we really have two issues. In terms of the bylaw fix, they're actually already declared in a positive vote because they're saying 25% of, I don't have the words in front of me, but I believe they're saying 25% of the House. And they're not opening it to 25% of those, you know, with abstentions and whatever. So I think in terms of the rules that this group put out, the only one that's really open is the default when there isn't a bylaws. Then what the new council will have to deal with is if the new council does amend the operating principles or procedures that have been put forward, then they're faced with the decision of do they want to make a request to the board for a equivalent change in the bylaws to the PDP rules. And personally, I would recommend leaving that kind of request until after we figure out what the new PDP rules are anyway, because the bylaws will need to be reworked once the new PDP recommendations come through, remembering that the PDP thresholds that are in there now are in there as a placeholder.
Right.
This is Rob for one last little piece on this, and I think what Aubrey said is very important with respect to the thresholds, and I think it follows directly with the theme that reached the consensus or near consensus on it, and that is it said 25% of each house, 60% of each house, and that was with the intention, I suspect, not reading anybody's mind, but I think the correct interpretation is that is of the House, and when you say the House, you do have that denominator, which is all the voting members of that House. Hope I didn't just complicate things further.
Could you just restate what you just said, Rob? I'm not sure if I grasped what you said.
In the case, and here I am restating what I think Aubrey said, but, you know, essentially the threshold say, for example, 30% of a House. 30% of the House. And in that case, that reference to House refers to all the council members who are eligible to vote in that House, and therefore 30% of a 10-member House would be 3 people. The distinction being, as Aubrey stated, when you don't have a hardwired threshold in the bylaws, then what is the view of the council going forward? And that's where you get into the debate you're in now. It's, okay, if it's not a hardwired percentage, how do we want to treat more regular business that's not directly connected to a PDP or an election of a leader or something like that?
Well,
understood.
Yeah, so if we say the bylaws are clear, which I'll accept that, then we, you know, does it make sense to be inconsistent, to have different? To me, it doesn't.
No, it doesn't make sense to be inconsistent, for sure not. That's not the objective of the work team. We need to try to bring some consistency and coherency to the whole process. So, I mean, what I'm kind of hearing is, you know, pick your poison, and it's there's no solution here that I would be happy with. So, I guess if we say percentages is a better way to go because it's an easier way to do the counting and it's understood and it's carved in stone and all the rest of it, as opposed to a floating denominator, then I would come down on the side of maintaining the denominator as static.
Okay, so that's where I'm at. I think everybody on this call is there and from the work team except for Eric right now. So Eric, what is your opinion on the fact that percentages could potentially be manipulated if the denominator is not static? Does that bother you? Does that cause you any concern?
My first issue is really unchanged, which is the choice to not act is repurposed into an act.
Mm-hmm.
That was my issue.
Yeah, there's a balance, though. I mean, that's true. I can, you know, reasonably look at that and say that's true. But there's also a balance. I mean, there's the balance bat against the potential of percentages being manipulated. Balance that against the fact
that's
the bylaws.
That's the collective issue.
Huh?
The individual issue is, what is the semantics of an individual vote? Is it yes, no, or neither of the above? Or is it yes or no? And only those two choices. That's the choice that each voter has. That's the independent of anything else, that is whether or not how any collection of votes is dealt with.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where my problem lies.
Mm-hmm. But you have to then balance that, though, against the bylaws, which are for, again, just a few scripted scenarios, but obviously all of them that are important, already are saying that basically the denominator is fixed. So again, now it becomes an issue for us. Are we striving for consistency?
I was saying, not that I'm necessarily advocating of it, but taking a neutral position, bylaws can be changed. And especially the one relating to PDPs will be changed once the PSC's PDP group finishes its work.
Okay.
So the drive for consistency doesn't force us to take one decision or another. Yes, it means we may have a period, an interregnum, where there is some inconsistency. But if that is truly the belief of this committee and of the GNSO Council and community at large, that varying denominators is a good thing, for whatever reasons it's a good thing, then, you know, the community bottom-up, et cetera, should go to the board and say, fix it.
I'm sorry, Avery, I couldn't hear everything you said because the operator decided that since there was some noise on my line, I should be mute.
Uh-huh, yes, and you went through that section where you can't hear anything while you're going, where you're deaf and mute. Basically, what I was saying is the PDP stuff is temporary.
Yeah,
so
I know that.
All of these six ones are that. If consistency is really the rule, and by the way, I'm not necessarily sure I vote for consistency in all cases, but that's beside the point. Different rules may apply at different times.
Agree, Rep. Ray is pushing that, but agree. Go ahead.
Sorry if I'm coming across that way. I'm really not.
Go ahead, Avery.
But if consistency is that, then, you know, basically if it comes bottom-up from the community that we want a sliding denominator for PDPs, when it's time for the PDP changes to be taken to the board, which is when the PSC PDP group finishes its work, then, you know, what gets proposed is something with sliding denominators. And so there may be inconsistency in this interregnum, you know, of waiting for that to happen. I wouldn't recommend making an immediate plea to the board to change the bylaws for this because, you know, too much going on. But certainly 3-4 months down the road, hopefully sooner, when the PDP group is finished, you ask for sliding denominator. And you come back to consistency. It's basically the PDP numbers are a transition element, and they're what we're going to use until either they're changed or until the new PDP processes are decided on and become bylaw.
Good, thank you. My apologies for the noise in my ambient environment.
We never heard a thing.
Well, then I'll sniffle louder.
Well, I guess, you know, hearing in what Avery just said and trying to interpret it, I mean, we could qualify our position and say as long, you know, for as long as the bylaws are identifying the you know, each house, assuming that it's the total number of members of each house. This is our position on the denominator being fixed or not. Should the bylaws be changed in the future, then our position is that the rules of procedure will then have to be changed.
Yeah, but I think that's, you know, your point is well taken, but I don't think we need to put that text in there saying that. As Aubrey said, bylaws can be changed. If there's a reason to be changed, then everyone agrees, then that happens. So I think that's understood. The question really comes down to how we as a work team want to take this forward or not. And I'm hearing that there are really two ways. One is individually to, you know, weigh in on it in the public forum. The other is as a work team. As a work team, I don't think that we've got a unanimous position on here. And neither Wolf Ulrich or Tony are on the call, so we don't know how the ISPs feel about this idea. So
yeah.
I'm not quite sure where we go, Chair.
Well, it's a 21-day public comment period that just began, and one option is to, even though we don't have unanimous, I don't think we're going to get unanimous, then we could have a dissenting opinion. You know, these members of the work team have this opinion, and here's a dissenting opinion.
The problem with framing things as dissenting opinions, at least in my experience dealing with PDPs with GNSO, is that that's where the cranks are. And nobody wants to get stuck in that box.
Well, the thing is Eric, is...
I'm always there. I'm fine
yeah.
with that.
The thing is, Eric, is in you know, this is important, and I'm glad you're on the call. Don't take anything I say the wrong way. The thing is that we already have a position. Your position is not sharpening it up, but changing it, and that's difficult. This is not the time. The time was before, when we were going through all this, not now. But again, don't take that the wrong way, because I opened the discussion. I wanted this discussion. The feedback is important. So, but I'm just saying that it's causing a bit of a problem because we already have stated a position. Now, really, it becomes, do we want to make it better? Do we favor this language being better? That's what I think the new language accomplishes. It's better than what we drafted originally.
I'll drop off the call at this point.
No, but Eric, okay. All right. Thank you for your contribution. I wasn't out of line. I hope anybody didn't take anything I just said out of line.
No. I think that Eric's comments are well taken, that, you know, people take that position, oh, if it's a dissenter, it's, you know, maybe in a fringe. I can kind of understand that. But I don't think that that's necessarily the issue. I think what we're hearing is that we as a community, as a work team, cannot come back here with a statement of support for this or a recommitment to it. But we could do it as individuals and just leave it at that.
I'm pretty much landing in the same spot,
yeah.
Ron. Aubrey, do you have an opinion on us as a discussion?
Yeah, no, I think it's pretty much what I said before, that I believe that if there were unanimity in this group, then putting out a statement would be the right thing to do. I think as long as there's any, you know, difference of opinion, then we should all state our opinions individually. I think you're right. When putting together the process, then the whole rough consensus with dissenting opinions is the applicable standard. I know this is the standard that we've always sort of used in the council also when trying to send out a letter and saying the council's position is thus. We needed to have unanimity, or at least unanimity with abstentions, as opposed to having a difference of opinion. As soon as there's a difference of opinion, everybody go say what you want to say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think the language here is good. The new language, you know, keeps in the concept of that an abstention, the reason for the abstention will be recorded in the minutes. I think that satisfies the issue. You know, I'm abstaining because I have a financial interest in this, clear as a bell. I'm abstaining because I don't agree with the position that my colleagues are taking for whatever reason. You know, there may be some other reason. But I can't vote no against this, but I just want to step back from the vote completely because of the mitigating circumstances, let's put it that way.
Mm-hmm.
So here, you know, what are those circumstances? Well, then it'll be stated. So I think that, you know, makes a pretty clear line for anyone. But as far as, you know, where we stand as a work team and where the idea of maintaining that denominator, it's a real tricky one. As I said before, I think it's, you know, the which of the two evils would you like to select?
Yeah.
Because, you know, and I don't think we're going to get around it. I think the arguments you guys have made about the denominator being a fixed thing in the bylaws is much more logical than trying to create some workaround. Doesn't make sense to me. So.
Okay. Well, as I'm going to go ahead and close this discussion then, and based on the fact that we're not going to reach a unanimous position on this as a work team, I thought it was worthwhile to have the discussion, given the in light of the fact that it's in public comment right now. So if anyone disagrees with that, we will not plan to submit as a group a public comment on this specific section 4.2.
Agreed.
Okay, very good. Before you join the call, Ron, I think I put out the request and asked that we go back to biweekly meetings. I don't think we need to go to weekly meetings, but I wanted to hear anybody else's opinion.
So that's fine for me. I'll be available next Wednesday. Oh, no, I'm sorry. Wednesday in 2 weeks, right? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. That's what I'm thinking, yes.
That's fine. My question, actually, Chair, is what more work do we have? Maybe I should be asking Gisela or Rob or someone in terms of our long list of things to do. What still is on that agenda?
Well, geez, we got to double back to your structure document. We still have to do that. We never
had
a chance to double back to that.
Yeah, we have to finalize that.
So we have to discuss that. There are still certain areas of the rules of procedure. One of them is proxy voting. And you know what? If we don't have enough people on the call today to do it, but another potentially helpful, perhaps constructive public comment would be for the work team to. And we would have to discuss this, don't get me wrong, but, I mean, I don't think that proxy voting is going to be realistic inside of ICANN's GNSO for legal reasons. And there's an opinion that Liz Gassner gave me and given me the history, and I'm reading this, I'm going, you know, I don't think it's going to be reasonable for us to even come up with a solution for proxy voting. But this is a work team discussion, so that's another item for us to work on.
Before you move off that one, just quick, do we have proxy voting today?
No.
No.
We used to, but an end was put to it a while back, a couple years ago.
And was there some rationale behind ending that?
I think this is in Liz's note, I believe that council looked at it at one point and said, hey, wait a second, you know, you can't do what you're doing.
Legal counsel.
And so then we started the format, formulate a new proposal to them, and that's what eventually ended up as the absentee voting bylaws change.
Oh, okay, thank you. Okay.
Yeah.
I just want to add a little background on that before we move off of that. Thank you. That's
yeah,
good.
But relatedly then, you know, there we have up to now, there are just these certain areas that we allow in the rules of procedure absentee voting. You know, if we say, you know, proxy voting is sort of off the table here, it's just never going to get past legal review, or I'm not sure the intricacy of the issues. But a solution to that would be to expand the ability for absentee voting.
So, well, you know, I see that, you know, we've got a placeholder in there now, and then we mentioned that after, you know, post or Seoul or post Seoul, we'll take this up again, but. Maybe Seoul is the ideal place. We should have maximum or a larger number of people on the call from the work team, and we can have counsel come in, legal counsel come in, explain the situation, ask our questions, do the debate, and make the vote, and get it checked off right there and then at Seoul.
I think it's
really about us all understanding what the issues are,
mm-hmm.
Chewing them up, and then
otherwise,
get it done. So let's try and check that off the listing in Seoul.
I agree with you. Otherwise, we'd just be kind of guessing anyway. So
it'll keep going on, right, exactly.
Yeah. So that's an excellent suggestion for our agenda in Seoul, Ron. And it's really, what is it? It's the proxy absentee voting issue.
Yeah.
So, good.
And actually, if you want, why don't we put on there the same issue about the expansion of the, you know, that what we tabled and we didn't finish, and we put out to the community the kite. Let's put the kite document on there and get a vote on that, get that checked off too, right then and there.
Good.
That should be a relatively easy one at that point, because people can go out and talk to various members of the community individually and then bring it to the table and say, well, I spoke to five people and they say it's a really stupid idea, or I spoke to five people and they kind of like it.
Right.
At least we can, you know, get that nailed down, as opposed to us guessing with a small team as we've always been.
Right, right, right. Yeah, we had some comments come back. I think Julie tabulated the table, but yeah, but point well
pretty,
taken. That's,
pretty
that's
small.
A,
yeah.
Yeah, so point well taken. So I think we've just formulated our sole agenda. I'm not sure about – I'm sorry, Aubrey?
Yeah, I think there's one more TBD that you have on there. Based on the comments that come in, there may be topics that don't need to be dealt with immediately by the council in terms of amendments, but are things that require a longer term, you know, or another term conversation by this group. So I would just leave it open for, you know, comment issues or issues that came up in comments that you know.
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm.
Consideration.
Yes. In other words, review the public comments and discuss.
Yeah, it's always good to do that.
Yeah, that's,
even
that's,
though the council will be doing it in terms of trying to figure out whether to approve or what to approve, I think for this group to take it back. And the one thing I'd like to add on the proxy voting is just because what we did before and what is currently conceived of may not be legitimate bylaws-wise, doesn't necessarily mean that there's no formulation that could fly.
Okay.
Agreed.
That's perfectly fair. Absolutely. I don't think I have anything else for today, and we're approaching our 1 hour. Anybody else?
Ray, this is Rob. Just one housekeeping item that I thought you would want to formally acknowledge as a work team.
Okay.
Last week at the GNSO Council meeting, the Council approved a restructure implementation plan. Item 12 of that plan reads, the charters of the GNSO Policy Process and Operations Steering Committee are extended until the end of ICANN's first general meeting in 2010. As you all may recall, when they were first approved, the steering committees were going to have a limited life, which would have ended in Seoul. As part of this implementation plan, there's now been that extension, and so presumably that would also extend the charter of this work team until the Nairobi meeting. So just so that you are generally aware of that, and you've all been discussing some future work, just thought as a housekeeping item you needed to be aware of that.
Yeah, thank you. An excellent point.
Thank you very much, Rob.
I think
what you're suggesting there is there may be more work for us to do, but I'm hopeful that under the guidance of our chair, we'll have it all checked off before 2010 rolls along.
Oh, there's no chance. There's no chance. I mean, we got to go back to the whole BGC document and discuss, you know, how different teams are established to take on issues that we can't even think of. And all we did so far is accomplish the rules of procedure, and that's, you know, to a point. There's a whole host of things inside that BGC for this work team to get to.
Well, then, Chair, pardon me. I wonder if we could just ask someone from staff if they could prepare then for us kind of a statement. Julie had been sort of leading that, kind of, you know, where we're at in our list of things to do, and maybe get a refreshed list of things to do published shortly, so we could get our head around that. Because when you say there's a whole host of things in the BGC, I'm not sure, or BCG, I'm not sure what there is.
Yeah,
so it'd be nice
enough
to see a list of that. So at least we got to all have a sense of what we're still working on.
Yeah. That's, and plus, you know, time has gone by, and maybe some things are different than before, and that's really a reprioritization process.
Yeah.
You know, so.
I will certainly talk with Julie about that, and we'll work on preparing a document that gives you guys that guidance for your next meeting, and that might help you with your additional agenda items for Seoul. I'd also just observe, Riley, that, Ron, I wasn't quite sure about your laughter and thanks there, whether you were pleased to know or not. Or
no, I was. My laughter and thanks was, I thought we were winding this thing down, and what I heard from you is, in fact, we're not winding it down. In fact, we're kind of winding it up. That's what I was chuckling about.
Well, and actually, in Aubrey's in a better position to interpret that section. I think there was just a recognition that there is certainly work from the other work teams that still needs to be done, and at the very least, while it's not a declaration of additional work, it was there to provide some flexibility.
Yeah, no, I've understood, and thank you for that.
Okay, that's all I have. If anyone disagrees, we can adjourn the call and end the recording. Okay, can we please adjourn and end the recording?
Okay, thanks. Bye-bye.
Thank
bye,
you.
Bye. Bye, everyone. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye-bye.